I went to Korea for a month after leaving here last fall to visit my brother-in-law, my nephew, my sister, and my father, who traveled with me and was the reason that I was able to finance the trip. Good old dad. I guess the first experience that I had was a real stark realization of the earth being round. Of being in the air for so long, we had daylight almost the whole way there on a 13-hour flight, and finally fell asleep. And it was light. Woke up and it was dark, and I looked out the window, and there was this huge city underneath me, and it was Tokyo, Japan. And I was overwhelmed. I was overwhelmed first by looking at the ocean and seeing no boats, no other airplanes around, nothing down there. And then just to realize I'm actually over Tokyo, Japan right now, and that I'm on the other side of the globe, and that was exciting. Then we landed in Seoul, and I didn't know what to expect. If I had chosen any place in the world to go and didn't have a sister living in Seoul, Korea, honestly, it wouldn't have been Seoul, Korea. I would have known nothing, not more about Korea than anyone right now. And I feel like in some ways, much like on the hitchhiking trips that put you in places you never would have chosen to go, that I just at random landed in Seoul. So I didn't know what to expect. There's a few little odd things that just struck me really comically and just sort of blew my mind. One was, you're driving along in a car and you come to a stoplight, and the stoplight is red and your car is still running, but you're stopped. Well, you turn your lights off if it's a nighttime. Then when the stoplight turns green, you turn your lights back on and you go. I didn't know why they did this. I still don't know why they do that. But everyone turns their lights off unless their car is actually in motion. That's just bizarre.
They do it in Russia too, and they do it in Russia because saving energy.
Well, I don't know. I figured it wasn't really my business to get to the bottom of this problem. They don't do it like me. Another thing was that on, I believe it's September 15th or October 15th, it's October 15th, they switch from summer clothes to winter clothes. It could be 80 degrees outside, and on October 14th, you would see people in short pants, short sleeves, and on October 15th, you would not see anybody in short pants or short sleeves. Everybody decides, and I guess there's a corresponding day in the spring where they switch to summer clothing as well. And, it seemed stupid to me at the outset, and in thinking about it, it seems stupid, but it, in comparison to building nuclear warheads, it is so wise. After being there a while, it was just like, who am I to question something as beautiful as that stupid idea? and these were the kind of things that, things like 5 lanes of traffic in 3 lanes, and nobody really caring too much except for me. So I was constantly hit with all these strange little things that I never even dreamed happened. I've written a lot of things down here to confuse me. Part of my interest was in music. A lot of my interest in life is in music. And so I did pay attention to mostly popular music in Korea. I went to a few nightclubs and heard a lot of American Top 40 music, heard a lot of Korean Top 40 music, which seemed to have the same, seemed to have a sort of sad, lots of minor keys, sort of a sad quality to it, and I don't know why that is, or if it's just, I know the pentatonic scale, which is very predominant in Asian cultures, as well as Native American cultures, must have influenced some, and that is in a sort of minor form. But there was a sort of yearning quality to the music that struck me and moved me. And I don't know if that's because the Korean people have been the peninsula of Korea comes out of, well, China is to the west, and the Soviet Union is to the north, west, yeah, northwest, and Japan is across the water to the east, and it has been the battleground over centuries, in the same way that Poland in Europe has been a battleground. China and Japan have fought on the battleground of Korea many times, as well as the Manchu people of what is now northern China, southern, southeastern Soviet Union, fighting with the Chinese and the Japanese. Also, we're always crossing Korea, and often just conveniently fighting there, as well as on their own ground, to settle their differences or create more differences. So maybe that's part of the reason. Maybe also the poverty that has been there through history, although that is changing, is also a factor. The poverty, the Korean standard of living is about half that of the United States or Japan. So Koreans are very poor by our standards. For instance, I met a man, a friend of my sister's, Hung Tech, who was a student of English from her, and he's probably 26, 27 years old, and went to one of the top universities in Korea. And in Korea, your future is determined by a test you take in high school, like the Chinese examination, kind of, that determines what college you can go to, and the college you go to determines exactly what kind of job you can have and at what level you can be in at that job. And so Hyung Tech went to one of the three top universities in Korea, and so he qualified for one of the top entry-level positions. He studied as an engineer, and I can't remember what the company did he worked for, but he works from 8 o'clock in the morning until 6:30 in the evening, with a lunch break, Monday through Friday, and he works on Saturday from 8 in the morning until 3:30 in the afternoon, with a lunch break, and has Sunday off, and gets 1 week of paid vacation, and earns $500 to $600 a month, and this man is at an engineering position, and I mean, in comparison to here, an engineer would make probably twice that at an entry-level position or more.
But to compare the prices, I think, too. The prices are probably lower in Korea. Prices.
Cost
of living.
Food is not cheaper. Some food is cheaper. Rice is not cheaper. Beef is considerably more expensive. A roast, you know, $25. $30 for a roast, medium-sized beef roast, something like that.
Housing.
I didn't get the numbers on it. The housing conditions vary. Now, my sister and brother-in-law live well, very well by Korean standards, and they don't pay rent. There's no rent in Korea. What you do is you pay, I can't remember what it's called, you pay a certain fee For them, it was roughly $20,000 that they pay to move into a place, and then they don't pay any rent. The owner of the apartment complex then has that money to play with, invest, whatever, and that's the way that they make their money on what we would consider rentals.
How long are they permitted to live there for that amount? Indefinitely?
Until they're kicked out. It's a year-to-year thing. So they could be booted, and then they would then get their $20,000 back.
All of it?
Yes. All of the money that they invested, they would get back. It seems like a good deal in some ways, except for coming up with that $20,000 is...
They have to come up front?
Up front, yeah. So, that involves usually financing in some way or another, which often in Korea is done through your family. I mean, you would pull all the strings you can through your family to get whatever you want. And the obligations of the family are very great. Confucianism is parallel to Christianity in the United States, whereas Confucianism is not a religion. Buddhism is probably the predominant religion in Korea, but it doesn't have the same cultural impact in the same way that you might think of. Most people in the United States are not Christians. The United States is more and more secular of a country, but the Christian ethic and the Christian culture is so is very, very present here in everything. And Confucianism has a lot of stress on family, government, your place in society. And people, I think, are less able to see themselves outside of any structure like that in Korea. You rarely will see... I like to go to cafes and drink coffee and sit there by myself sometimes. And that is just almost not seen. That always in groups or in pairs or in... Everything is social. That and families are a very big part of the way you live your life. The oldest son has a high place in the family. Matter of fact, if you haven't had a son and you have a daughter, you will get condolences from your friends, kind of a better luck next time instead of congratulations. And if you are
in Europe, maybe not as strong.
In any family, every person in the family has a given hierarchical place. For instance, I could not address my older brother as Steve. I would have to call him oldest brother. He could call me Rolf. And I could call my younger siblings by their names, but I couldn't call my older siblings by their common names. I would have to refer to them as first oldest brother, second oldest brother, third oldest brother, whatever, wherever they fell above me. Although I'm not sure how that is in terms of sisters. I think it's not the case with sisters. Although the sisters, I think, respond to each other in that fashion. Confucianism is inherently very sexist, and so the status of women is very second class in Korea. And that was something I learned. I learned a bit about one opportunity I had to meet Korean people was that both my sister and my brother-in-law teach in different settings. My sister teaches English at a Catholic university. My brother-in-law teaches communications and English in a couple of different universities, and they both teach also at a private institution that sends or that people buy tapes through and then go and get language lessons through that program. But one place my brother-in-law teaches is at the largest women's university in the world, Ewha University in Seoul, and he six women on graduate level studying English. And I visited the class 2 weeks in a row because they want to hear native speakers. My brother-in-law is Korean, lived in the United States for 10 years. Yes.
You say the sexism is bad. Is that just the kind of a social thing, or do they get different education as well?
They can get the same education, uh-huh. but they cannot get the same job when they get out of school. Anyway, so I went with my brother-in-law to this class, and there were six Korean women there. And one thing they wanted, what my brother-in-law wanted me to do was talk about things that would get them thinking and talking without, and lose the consciousness of the fact that they were speaking and thinking in English. So they wanted things that would kind of get things rolling. So I told a story about two of my friends in Minneapolis who were married for 4 or 5 years, had two children, decided they no longer wanted to be married, got divorced, co-parented the children, lived three blocks apart, and each had the children for 3 days. And they'd go back and forth. And of course, that got us talking about divorce and about what it is for Korean children to be in a divorced family, and eventually got us talking about the condition of women. There's a thing called family law, which when a Korean woman marries, she is no longer legally part of her natural family. She is legally a part of her husband's family. And the children that they have are also legally a part of the husband's family. And if they divorce, the woman is no longer the mother of the children, legally. So that's one way that Korean women are really trapped into often less than ideal marriages. Another thing, when a Korean woman marries, she will move in with the Korean man and his family, and basically takes orders from her mother-in-law. So it's she moves into subservience into that family, and so there's ill will, but not a lot of overt disrespect. There's one other thing I wanted to. Oh. I remember studying the history of women in America in college, a course, and remember watching the as American women gained in economic power, American women gained in freedom and in the ability to insist on more in terms of relationships. And it was real evident that in Korea it's still quite a ways back, that women don't have the power to go and earn a decent living. So they are economically dependent on men, whether it's their father or their husband, or prostitution is another one of the few ways that Korean women can survive.
Independently.
There are a few artists, of course, violin players, whatever, that make it in the arts. So unless you come from a family of wealth, it's very important for you to marry. And it's very important that you stay in good terms with your husband's family if you want things to run smoothly.
Can he divorce the wife?
Yes, he can divorce the wife.
And keep the children.
Now, one thing that was amazing to me is that I'm convinced that I'm safer, or that my sister is safer walking the streets of Seoul at 11 o'clock at night in a dark alley alone than I would be walking the streets of Seattle in broad daylight. There's just almost no violence of that sort
Because?
I don't know. You know, just it's just very strongly ingrained in the people that is not done.
Is it like in China that they kill you if you do the least
bit of? I don't know what the.
They do
have taekwondo things. My little nephew's already going around going taekwondo. You know, he's 2 years old. But maybe part of it is the absence of firearms. There are police all over the place, and almost none of them have guns. And certainly none of the citizens own handguns. So, you know, that might be part of the reason that they're. So that violent crime on that level just doesn't exist.
What do they do if they're mentally ill?
I'm sure that there isn't a lot of attention paid to that they're in bad shape.
Do families keep
families,
them as
families
well
would take care of them.
And keep them safe.
Yeah, I would think. I you know, that's my guess.
That might be part of the reason.
Maybe, yeah, that might be. But violence does occur among husbands against wives a lot. And the women have no recourse.
If a husband divorces his wife, can she go back to her family, or is she forever out of her own family?
She probably would go back to her family, but she's not legally a part of her family anymore.
Does the husband continue to support her financially?
No. There are a lot of women, 50-year-old women, 60-year-old women, carrying around whatever. A lot of the goods of the markets are carried on A-frames on people's backs, and you see people that are. And often women who seem old enough to not be, too old to be doing that kind of work are doing that kind of work. And that is one reason that they're doing that. Also, well, my sister and brother-in-law have a maid who they pay well by Korean standards, and she works 6 days a week from 9 a.m. till 6 p.m. For about $150 a month, and cooks 2 meals a day, and takes care of their kid when they're working, and she never really gave the story about, you know, where her husband is. She has some kids, and her husband is no longer around, and her kids are around. So, you know, obviously there are some cases where the husband doesn't take the children, but in that case, I mean, that would put the woman in a very difficult economic situation. There's very little in the way of welfare, and what there is often not pursued because of the stigma and the humility of that.
Do husbands and wives who get married and move in with the father's family or the husband's family, is that forever? Do they ever move out on their own?
Yeah, they, you know, eventually, well, in some cases they don't. It depends on the economic situation, I think. It's like I met my brother-in-law's parents, and they have, one of their sons lives with them and has, oh, I think four children, and his wife and the four children, and he live with his parents in a very small place. They had a traditional Korean house, which you use the same room for a lot of different things. You know, you move the futons out of the way, and the pillows are there, and that's your living room space. And you bring out this little portable table with the food on it, sit around it, and eat. And then you move everything out of the way. And they had probably a space for those people as big as where that doorway comes in. This will be real good for the people on tape. Across to here, with maybe, you know, across to over here. Koinonia, fireplace room, right? And that's the place that all those people live in. And they do a lot of their cooking outside, and all their clothes washing outside. They have, this is the middle of Gwangju, which is a large city, probably 3 million people. And the plumbing is, you know, just basically into the hole in the ground and into the river. And Seoul is also that way a lot.
But it's so cold in Korea. It's still wash outside.
Mm-hmm. Especially wash outside. I mean, some of the cooking's done outside, but that's probably half-half type of deal. But yeah, there's the heat is in the floors, which is kind of nice for people like me that always have cold feet. And people sleep on futons, which are little mats about that thick, maybe about 4 inches thick, that they roll out. 4 inches thick like that. And anyway, let's see.
What do they think of the United States of America?
That's something I asked. My sister set me up with some students. She'd had the term before, political science students, and so I got to sit and talk, and they got to practice their English for about an hour and a half one day with five or six Korean political science students. And my interest was what they thought of American government, Americans. I wanted to get some feedback on that. And there doesn't seem to be too much ill feeling. They are concerned about protectionism, which, looking at it simplistically, you can say it's ridiculous the Koreans would be blaming Americans for protectionism, because if I wanted to bring my Mustang over to Korea, I would have to pay as much in taxes to bring it in as it cost me for the car. So there are virtually nothing but Korean cars in Korea. And so they are definitely protecting their auto industry. What Koreans are saying is that, yeah, that's true, and look at the standard of living here, and it's not fair for the United States to impose the same kind of protectionist policies on Korea as they do on Japan, which has double the standard of living of Korea. So they're saying, you know, you can't look at fair without looking at fair as in our standard of living is half of yours. What's fair? You know, so do you see what I mean? That's their perspective on protectionism is, well, we might look at it as, well, we aren't protectionist as far as Korean imports, yet terribly protectionist. Certainly not as much on the dollar level as they are on American imports into Korea, but they're saying other things aren't equal. So it's not fair for Americans to impose stronger protectionist policies against Korea because the Korean economy is struggling a lot more than the American economy. Although it's at a higher growth rate, the economy. A few little fun facts. Koreans are buying 30% more automobiles every year. So they are not adjusted to automobiles. They also have the highest pedestrian fatality rate in the world. And you drive along, and people, yeah, it was scary. We went on a road trip for 4 days. Me, my nephew, my sister, my brother-in-law, and my dad, 4 days in a little car in these hotels with a two-year-old. It's real fun. But there was a lot that I saw besides going nuts. And one was that we come through these towns. We came through one town as school was letting out, and people just were walking right on the street. They would not move till the last possible minute. These are streets where the speed limit would be like 40 miles an hour, and cars would go by them at fast rates. You'd have these wheeled carts on the same highways as the semis and buses. you know, you can see why that was true. People just, little kids were not even taught to be afraid of traffic. You know, it's just incredible. And, you know, I landed in L.A. when I got back, and it was just like wide streets, people not walking in them. I mean, it was interesting. It was scary. You know, lots of horn honking.
Do pedestrians have the right of way against cars in the streets?
I don't think they do. And
obviously not. They're all eating.
Yeah, well.
Going over.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, that the automobile has hit Korea.
You're being shot for doing it.
The automobile has hit Korea so fast that it's just kind of, you know, the streets aren't designed for it. A lot of, especially in the rural areas.
There probably are no sidewalks.
Yeah, in those places there aren't. In the city, in Seoul, certainly there were, and in Gwangju and larger cities, there were. The government of Korea is, well, I think it's safe to say that at least 80% of the population of Korea is in opposition to the government. It's in the same way that in the United States, two parties are assured of staying in power. In Korea, the party in power is assured of staying in power. Technically, they could be voted out, and I'm not sure the exact, it's something like this, that in an election, the population determines only part of the outcome, the popular vote determines part of the outcome of the election, and a congressional body determines the other part. Well, the party in power controls a large percentage of the congressional body. So it would take an enormous popular vote against the party in power to overthrow them. And the likelihood of corrupt ballot practices would be there then. The president builds industry in his home province. You know, things like that. That there's so much favoritism, and it's very overt, and people are aware of it. And so, and also, there's no tolerance of opposition to the government in the press or among, you know, you'll lose your job if you oppose the government. One place that it's tolerated is among students. The only place it's tolerated is among students. And even then, if the student takes it too far, his family could suffer for it. So it's a serious matter. But the students do continue to protest, and protest regularly. I think partially because, what was the guy's name? They were responsible for ousting Syngman Rhee, who was president until 1960 for 12 or 13 years. So the students have seen the effectiveness of student demonstration. And where my brother-in-law and sister live is within walking distance of four large universities. And there are gates to the universities, and the gates at each gate of every university is a riot bus. With the screens and the shields and equipped with tear gas and whatever is necessary to keep the students on campus. Now, if they're allowed to demonstrate while they're on campus, the minute they try to get off campus, tear gas. So I got a lot of experiences of tear gas. It's very regular. Korea didn't produce their own tear gas until just recently, and until they started producing their own, there wasn't so much around, but now it's just like a lot of tear gas. And so the students will start a demonstration, then they'll sing and march, and eventually try to move off the campus. The tear gas will happen. They'll go to the other gate on the other side of the campus. The tear gas will happen, and then the demonstration will disperse. And these people are serious, the students are, and you get the feeling that you're really in the middle of something, you know, that it seems almost comical, the nature of the demonstrations, and it's not.
What are they about, the demonstrations?
whatever, there was one against American protectionism, often against policies of the president, you know, many different things.
What's the feeling towards the American military presence?
I think that there's a, I don't think that America is showing its probably its best foot or whatever to Koreans in the military personnel that are there. And the South Koreans have a very real fear of North Korea. And the people I talk to, rationally, I don't think they think that actually North Korea will come and invade them again. But North Korea did invade when South Korea was not prepared in 51, I believe it was, 1951. And they occupied all of Korea except for Busan, which is in the far south. So there's a fear, definite fear, of invasion by the North Koreans. So they do feel somewhat dependent on American military presence. The danger, I think, to Americans is we have a dependence on them to have a military base or two in that nice strategic point in the world. And so regardless of what kind of atrocities, what kind of human rights are violated, what kind of government the South Koreans have, the United States will support them. Because it's not as far as it's gone in the Philippines or in El Salvador or, you know, places like that. But you can see that we're in the same kind of a bind in Korea. The American government is in the same kind of bind in South Korea as we are everywhere else that is non-communist, where we need military bases.
Ralph, you said that the student demonstrations were very serious. Is there any real genuine move to try and get them off campus besides the kind of incident you mentioned?
While I was there, there were Korean students that took over, they occupied an American trade building or something. And they were arrested, went to jail, and probably will be there for a long time. There are incidences of it. One thing that's interesting is that Korean boys, men, whatever they are at the age that they go into the army, everyone goes into the army. And often students will go to school for a couple of years, then go to the army for a couple of years, then come back to school. Well, after they've gone in the army for 2 years, they don't come back and demonstrate anymore. That's just pretty much the demonstrating happens before going to the army. They go into the army and they may be sitting there in that riot bus at the gate of their former university, you know, doing the tear gas to the people that were in the position they were in. So it's very hard to. The Korean government is very effective at putting down the kinds of demonstration and opposition that they want to. So that's one thing that happened while I was there is that Korea was involved in an elimination match with Japan for the World Cup, which will be held in Mexico City next year. And the Koreans and Japanese have been enemies. Japan occupied Korea from the 1890s until the end of the Second World War. And even through history, there's been just a constant hate between the countries. And so it was interesting. It's not as much now, of course, as it was in 1945. But the Koreans, the Sundays, there were two matches, one in Tokyo and one in Seoul. And the two matches, while they were on, the streets of Seoul were empty, the buses stopped running, and the terminals were full of people and bus drivers watching it on any TV they could see to see this match. The Koreans won, so it was a great hoopla for them. It was kind of fun to be around while that was going on.
World Cup
soccer. One thing that happened that I know that, you know, that most Americans are timid about singing, and Koreans are not timid about singing. Singing is really part of life. And I went on a bus trip with my brother-in-law and faculty and students from the Catholic University that he teaches at to a place that was commemorating the martyrdom of some Catholics that had been determined saints about a year ago or something by somebody. And so, anyway, we went there. It was about a 3-hour ride. On the way back, after about an hour, this guy picks up a microphone in the front of the bus, which is attached to a PA that runs throughout the bus, and starts telling a story, and everybody's laughing. I don't understand anything that's going on, except for that there was real playful energy going on. I could tell that. And then he sings a song. Then he hands the mic to someone else. They sing a song. Hands the mic to someone else. Here we spent the last, you know, 2 hours of this bus ride, people singing solos, myself included, my brother-in-law included, who cannot sing worth whatever. You know, but singing at the top of his lungs without any shame, probably singing the same song he sings any time the microphone gets to him, maybe even a song someone else had sung already that day on the bus. And people just enjoying it and without shame of cracking voices and just, I was moved by that. Just,
remember what you sang?
I sang, "In Christ there is no east or west."
Is that right?
Yeah.
That is wow.
Just north and south.
maybe more true than we like to believe.
Did anybody respond to that in terms of awareness of what you were singing or not?
There wasn't really time to find out. I only knew the first verse of it too, so. But you know, I don't know how many of them understood what I was singing, but I wanted to sing that song. And you had a question.
Yeah, you said your brother came to the States to live for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of the Korean people leave their country for a while and then come back.
A lot of Koreans would like to live here. Mm-hmm. And some come here to get educated and then go back.
What do they think they'll get if they live here that they don't have there? Do they think they're missing?
Money, material wealth, I would think.
Better education,
yeah. Probably, yeah.
Does he plan to come back here to live after he teaches there a while?
Yeah. Although it wouldn't surprise me if they stayed there forever.
Is that right?
Yeah. My sister likes it a lot. She's in a nice position because she's a teacher, which under Confucian tradition, teachers would never mingle with their students, would never joke with their students, would never be friends of their students. And being an American, she has a lot more latitude in that respect. And so she plays, you know, she banters a lot with her students and teases them and also can talk about things that Korean teachers can't talk about or wouldn't talk about or maybe aren't thinking about talking about. And one thing she's very interested in talking about is the condition of women. And, you know, consequently she feels effective and is one of the most popular teachers in her school and, you know, and...
So she has a sort of a secret mission.
Yeah. Plus she's been interested in Asian culture ever since high school, so it's she speaks pretty good Korean now. Not real fluent, but can get by. Let's see if there's any other little things I wanna say. Once a Korean there's a lot of things that are unsaid. For instance, if someone bumps into you, they don't say excuse me because it's assumed that they're sorry. They don't say anything. They'll bump into you over and over again. I got hit with a shopping cart, you know, 3 times in a row and nothing said. I'm kind of thinking, you know, should I say excuse me or what, you know? Another thing is once there's very little public demonstration of affection. My sister, I hugged her once. We'd gone downtown and she was going to go home, and I gave her a hug, and she said, no, you can't do that, you know. And not that she didn't want me to hug her, but that she didn't want me to hug her there. And so among men and women, almost no display of public affection, and very little. My sister says, traditionally, Koreans do not compliment one another once they're married. They don't compliment each other. That it's assumed that the marriage was the compliment, and that's it. And they don't do it. And it's bizarre. No friendships of men and women once men and women are married.
To somebody else.
Yeah, too. And probably very little between husband and wife, too, unless they lucked out, you know.
It's true even with children, isn't it? They show a great deal of real affection and cuddliness, if that's a word, to their kids.
No, I don't think that's true. Koreans they love children a lot. And my nephew gets pinched in the cheek by strangers on the street. Oh. And that's common. And kids are just adored. You can take your kid into a restaurant and he can scream the whole time he's there, which he did. And people just think how cute. Whereas here, it's just like, get your kid out of here. Would you just take him somewhere where it's appropriate for him to be, you know, kind of thing. And so kids are adored. That was
are they touched a lot?
Yeah, they're touched a lot.
So that's
they're carried on their mother's backs and stomachs a lot, too. And yeah, they are. Matter of fact, a Korean baby sleeps with their parents until the next baby comes along, or until the Korean baby wants to move into their own room.
That's a lot different in the Philippines. Then I thought it would be probably about the same.
No. There's vast differences between, say, Southern Asia and Northern Asia, or probably between any Asian. The culture of Korea is so pure in that sense. That struck me. You know, I never thought about the melting pot that much. But you know, our cultures are so diluted, and the beauty. There's a lot of beauty in the variety and what the synthesis of these cultures are, and something's lost. That the richness of the Korean culture, and that everyone is Korean. Everyone has the same history. Everyone has the same tradition. And that just, you know, it never crossed my mind that could exist. Let's see.
Tell us something about the school system.
Let's see. I don't know a whole lot about the school system. Except for that in your last year of high school, you take an examination that determines your future, basically, in terms of...
How many years of school do they have to go?
11 or 12 years of school before university. Mm-hmm. And then, I think, 4 years of university, pre-graduate, you know, undergraduate.
What age do they take the test?
At what age?
Yeah.
17 or 18. My brother-in-law's brother's daughter was getting ready for hers and just studying. You know, 3 months, just, you know, couldn't come to dinner one night because she had to study and her test was still a month away. So it's serious.
Does everybody have a chance to go to school?
Yeah, public school, not to university, if you don't score high enough on your... But there are more, you know, more high percentage of Korean people go to college than Americans. I know about Sweden.
But you don't?
No.
How many times can they take the test?
One time.
And that's it?
Yep, so if you happen to just have a bad day, tough luck. Yeah, it's not like an SAT or an ACT test or something.
Yeah.
It's the test, and better be ready kind of thing.
So universities are free then?
No, your family pays for the university, and we'll go into hawk or whatever it takes. And money in the family is seen differently, you know, in the way that often husband and wife in the United States will share finances and share a bank account and not really figure out who made how much and how much is whose. it's almost not, it's just, it's more on a wide scale. The extended family is included in that. If you're, my brother-in-law's brother wanted to start a business, so he loaned him money, and the business failed. His brother never paid him back, and that's just the way it goes.
Any hard feelings, though, in the house?
I think so. And
his brother-in-law asked him, what if he didn't choose to give it to him? Would that also be hard feelings?
Probably. Yeah. If you got to be careful. If you invite someone to dinner, and they don't have the facilities to invite you back, it's an insult. Or if you give someone a gift, don't go give someone an expensive gift that doesn't have the money to give you an expensive gift back, because it's a terrible insult. Mm. That kind of thing. It's that was interesting. I know there's a couple little things here I want to say. That I didn't say. Oh, the whole issue of affection, that I was saying that affection between men and women is very rare. Affection between men and men and women is very common. And there's virtually no homosexuality, at least that people are aware of, or have discovered in themselves. You know, just not, it doesn't happen. A little among the theater group, the artist class, whatever. But, you know, just, it's very, very uncommon. And it's obvious that people are getting some of their physical affection needs met, a lot of them met from their friends. When you're in middle school, which is like junior high or high school, and a few in college, you make your group of friends for life. And you'll see, when we went on this trip, a lot of people travel by bus. They'll rent a big van or a small bus. And you'll see, we saw groups of 45, 50-year-old women traveling, just women traveling together, or just men traveling together. And these are people they met as children and have been friends with for their whole life. It's just structured into their culture that's how it is. And they don't have many other friends that are not among that group, which, of course, is limiting and beautiful. You know, the fact that these people maintain contact with these people their whole life and feel a certain loyalty, almost a filial connection with them for their whole life, was really neat. And you see these people walking arm in arm, men walking, holding hands, women walking, holding hands in hands. You know, seeing girls. One girl standing in front of another girl with her arms around her waist and her head on her shoulder, just enchanted with her friend and comfortable and feeling good about it. The connections between friends seem to be more warm than the connections between husbands and wives or boyfriends, girlfriends. You can tell if people are on a honeymoon because they are walking arm in arm or something. If they're not, if they're doing that somewhere else at some other time in their life, it's very odd.
What about arranged marriages?
That's becoming less common, but that was the way it was. But it's not as common anymore. But I think it probably still goes on. I don't know.
When the kids grow up, do they tend to stay in the same city that their parents were in, or do they have much mobility around the country?
Well, Korea is about the size of Indiana. And they don't have much choice about going any further than that. And there's a great move to Seoul from everywhere else. Seoul is just booming. 8 million people in Seoul, Korea, one of the largest cities in the world. So a lot of people are moving to Seoul. And there's pressure on them not to do that from their family. although that's often a place where you can make advances economically more than in the outlying areas. Outlying, I mean everywhere else.
Does anyone wear the traditional costume anymore, the older men or the older women?
Mm-hmm.
And what is it? Is that the tall hats? And the
Yeah.
Do you see this?
Well, there's a wealth, the wealthy traditional outfit was a black hat that goes straight up like this and has a big black brim around it. And I saw more of the more common traditional, which is silk, puffy sleeves. In the winter, a felt brownish hat, almost like just a regular hat, fedora hat kind of. In the summer, a straw hat. And it was funny because I wanted a straw hat, you know. I wanted one of these straw hats, and of course I'd gotten there after the 15th of October and none of the stores had them. I couldn't find them. No one was wearing, you know. I think I saw them the first couple days I was there because I got there on the 13th or something, you know. And I wanted one, and I looked all over for it, and I couldn't find it. But and then the women wear long dresses, long silk dresses that seems like they gather here, and you know, older women, younger women are dressing more like Westerners, a lot like Westerners. Although there's a lot less flamboyant appearance, flamboyant dress. There's not a lot of need, it seems like, among Korean people to stand out. There's a much greater need to fit in.
You mean less colorful things?
Less, well, no, because, but less, always find a bunch of other people wearing pretty much that thing. Japanese, what they call the Japanese look is really in Korea now. I don't know exactly how to describe it. Sort of almost new wave or something look. Wide shoulders and, you know, big leather belts and, you know, kind of the modern look here. But not, you know, there's a sort of normalness to it all too. Like for instance, my Birkenstock shoes got stared at a lot. My earring got stared at a lot. You know, to the point where I would not wear it some days just because I didn't want that to be a factor, you know, because it was. You know, people, you'd see a clerk at a market that would say, that would point to the earring. I'm walking right by and just point to the earring and kind of want to know about it, although they, not knowing English, wouldn't be able to ask. Not knowing Korean, I couldn't respond. And so I would keep walking.
Well, if you haven't said anything about the church, do you have any opportunity to observe anything about church life, its role in society?
I went to a Lutheran church that was in English that my sister and brother-in-law attend. I think they attended regularly when my father, a Lutheran pastor, shows up, and not too regularly when he's not allowed to hear this. No. No, I think, I don't know, you know, how often they go to it, but that was my experience of a Christian church, which was not a fair example of how the Koreans are Christian. I know it's about, I think it's 16% Christian, and 3% of that is Catholic, and the rest Protestant.
Most of which is Presbyterian, very popular.
Yeah, I think Presbyterian is real common. And my sense is that in the same way that American Buddhists are very Christian in their whole ethical base and way of looking at their linear look at the universe and, you know, that kind of thing. In the same way, I think probably Korean Christians are very Confucian in their actual sense of life, you know.
From what you've said, I would gather that you did not observe any persecution as far as the government is concerned.
No, not anymore. There's not. Although, you know, there was definite persecution. The conflict between ancestor worship, which the Catholics were the first to, I think it was the Catholics were first and then the Protestants came, that there was definite persecution. As a matter of fact, I went to a place that commemorated the martyrdom of a number of Catholics. And I recognized only one thing in the Mass, and that was the passing of the peace. And I thought of here, it was only a handshake, but it still was a nice expression.
Did you miss us?
You particularly. There were probably a couple days where I didn't swoon.
Korea has the largest church in the world, as I understand. With the most members. It's in the mountains somewhere. Anybody else in there?
You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. South Korea. It's the largest Christian church.
Really?
Pastor Cho or something like that?
Yeah. Sounds possible.
Yes, thousands.
Yeah,
thousands.
Like 10,000.
How was it to travel and not knowing the language?
Well, the traveling I did was with my sister and my brother-in-law, or one of the other of them. And so I didn't want to travel without someone who could speak both English and Korean, because although just bumming around Seoul was a challenge, the first few days I carried a piece of paper that had in Korean written the address of my sister's place, so I could give it to a cab driver and say, hey, Harry, here we go. You can go, 15 miles in a taxi for $3. You know, I mean, it's very cheap to take taxis. But I saw it as a challenge to try to get around in the subways in Seoul, and I played with that a number of times. When I went looking for, Jackie sent me on a mission to get a rice paddle, a thing that they used to use to imprint. Do you have it with you?
Yeah.
Oh.
Sure do. I was
just send it around. And they use it to imprint rice cakes with a design. And so I spent one day, most part of a day, trying to track down where I could find these things, because they don't use them anymore, I don't believe. At least they don't use them in the wood form. And so it took me all over the place and got me lost a few times and took me to a place where there are a lot of antiques, and it was fun.
In the school where I learned ceramics, one of the teachers would use it to paddle pots and use it beautifully in the film.
So that's why you wanted.
That's how I'm amused, but I'm not sure I want to do it. It's so pretty. I've tried it.
Well, I've pretty much just exhausted everything I know. No, said anything, but I'd be willing to, answer questions as long as you have them.
What did your brother-in-law's family think of him marrying an American?
I don't know. My sister's really wonderful, and. And she's won him over if there was any problem. And they also, his parents are somewhat liberal in terms of changing. Traditionally, the inheritance goes to the oldest son. And the law has changed, so that's not compulsory anymore. But still, it's commonly done. And even before the law was changed, he had arranged, my brother-in-law's father had arranged to have the inheritance spread out among the children, including his daughter. They seem open to some new ideas. Really cool people. Really, it felt really good, especially my brother-in-law's mother just had such a warmth about her. We couldn't communicate hardly, because my brother-in-law was getting pretty tired of being the interpreter of every conversation. And one thing that was interesting, my dad, of course, I think my brother-in-law has a lot of the old Confucian feelings. You know, father-in-law comes to visit and you put out the red carpet. And I got to see what the red carpet was, and it included these hotels that were just, you know, the four-star type hotels, and a trip to a place, a hot springs, which turned out to be more like Las Vegas than a mountain resort. You know, it was, you know, I don't know. It was interesting just seeing Ben entertaining his father-in-law when he came to Korea, you know. He was cute. I should send them a tape.
It seems like any family who sends children to the United States for education, right away, that must be a fairly liberal and thing,
yeah,
that would say, hey, whatever happens, happens, while they're gone from our country. So they must be pretty open to whatever,
right,
changes are going to happen in the children.
Yeah, and I think that in some ways it's difficult for my brother-in-law because he no longer, he was here for 10 years, originally intended to stay here, and going back to Korea, having been in the United States this long, having married a feminist, and, you know, that in some ways he's kind of, you know, doesn't fit into Korean culture anymore. You know, that it's, I think it's hard for him that he has to relearn the traditions. There's a lot of obligatory lunch and dinner and drinking dates in order to gain promotion or job or whatever.
Even in education?
In education, a lot of, he was trying to secure a tenure track. When you're hired, it's tenure there. When you're hired long-term, you know, for more than 1 year, it's a permanent job. And he was spending a lot of time trying to take the right people out to lunch and say the right things, not cross the wrong person. And that's just part of it.
It's surprising if she's the one that says she'd like to stay there and he'd like to come back here.
Well, their reasons, one main reason they'd like to come back is so that their son, and I don't know, they have another child on the way, and if that's a son, they, you know, they don't want him to serve in the military. And they also don't want they would like their children to get an American education in terms of not picking up all the ideas about what women are, what men are, what boys are, what girls are, and that. Well, one thing that was really neat was that when I came back, I was on the plane, and next to me, I was sitting on the, you know, on the aisle side of the window side of a 747, so there are five seats next to me, and then the next aisle over from that. Well, in the middle section where these five seats were two American adults and five Korean babies, three girls and two boys. And of course, it was probably about half Americans and probably more than half Koreans and you know, less than half Americans on the plane. And with the Korean people and their infatuation with children, there were enough volunteer people to come up and just hold those babies anytime they would cry. No one wanted to see those babies crying. And here I am leaving Korea, having met some people that touched me and having been there long enough to get used to the place a little bit and to see the richness of it, as well as some of the things that were a little hard to see. And seeing three little girls on their way to America. And I know my response to people who have said, oh, those are lucky kids to be coming to the United States, was, oh, you nationalistic, arrogant person, to say something like that. And my feeling, particularly about the three girls, they're going to be adopted in the United States, was those are three lucky girls.
Mm-hmm.
Because most likely they were of poor families or of, you know, families of, or of mothers with no husband, or even if they were just of middle, as by Korean standards, middle class families, the options to those, to all five of the children, because of the obligations that they would be under, and particularly to the girls, to the limited choices they would have as they grew to adults. You know, those, I thought, those are some lucky children to be coming to the United States, and they may turn into miserable, neurotic Americans, and you know, who knows. And I was surprised to hear those thoughts going through me.
Is there any kind of women's movement in Korea?
Yes, they have shelters for women now. One of the women in the class that my brother-in-law that I visited had worked in a shelter for women, battered women, and I mean, but it's very.
It's starting. Huh?
Yeah, and just the chances of progress going against such a strong Confucian tradition and such a controlling government. You know, I mean, the issue of women's liberation coincides with issues of human rights, and
Do women vote?
Yes,
there?
Yes.
Oh. What's the weather like there?
Well, it was snowing when I left. It was snowing when I left in the middle of November.
Was it?
And, but snow doesn't stay on the ground very long.
Is it like Seattle, sir?
I don't know. Every time I go to Seattle, it's sunny. No, I'm threatening to move there, and it'll to upset the whole ecosystem of the Northwest.
What's the temperature range?
I'd say low is something like 20, and it gets hot in the summertime. You know, I was only there in the fall, and it was very mild. So I mean, consult the atlas; it would tell you.
Don't you wash bunch of men?
And also the difference
well,
in the north and south is
something. He didn't say anything about the weather.
I mean, you're talking about 400-mile span. No, maybe 300-mile span, something like that. From north to south, so it'd be like traveling from Seattle to Middle Oregon or something like that. Something like that.
Do they try to control the size of families?
Mm-hmm.
Do they encourage?
I forget what the how their method is. If it's something I learned about China, or if it was how they did it in Korea, as far as tax breaks and, you know, for your first few children and less for more. But there's definitely an effort to keep the birth rate down.
Does your sister like living there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Her first year she was miserable. They lived in a small town, a 4 or 5 hour drive from Seoul. And there were it's almost no Western culture there at all, hardly any English-speaking people, and she didn't know Korean hardly at all yet then, and it was tough on her, and then she was pregnant for part of the time, and so that made things tough for her too.
I was wondering culturally what the women being so far down, especially she's a feminist here. It seems like that could be very difficult.
Yeah, one issue that came up was that for my brother-in-law to get a tenured position in a university, he would have to become a Korean citizen, which now he's a U.S. citizen, which makes, and for him to become a Korean citizen, automatically, under Korean law, if the husband is Korean, the wife is Korean. And so they were talking to the U.S. Embassy and stuff about this issue, and my sister did not want to be legally Korean under those, she does not and will not be a Korean citizen. And the American government protects Americans from having to get into the American women from having to be in that bind. Yes, under Korean law, they would be Korean and not American. Under American law, they would hold dual citizenship and could choose to be American citizens. Because if my sister's concern is if there's a war in Korea, which is always a possibility, that she wants to be able to get the kids and her and hopefully her husband out of the country, but certainly if he decides to be a Korean citizen, she still wants that option. So she can get passports for all for the you know her son and her future children, and can also maintain her own passport, which could get her out of the country, and then she could maintain her American citizenship and then not worry about green card, et cetera, et cetera. And through that, get her husband out too. Not maybe not as quick and easy.